The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Last season, Rafael Devers and Shane Bieber were the top breakouts in fantasy baseball, and both had an ADP outside the top 130. Who are this year's breakouts? We're about to find out. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a hump day, July 15th. Frank Stanfill alongside Scott White and Adam Azer. What's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
He's good.
Breaking out.
He's breaking out.
Let's dispense with the pleasantries, okay? We never handle this part well. We're good.
We can do better.
He's good.
We can do better. No. We can do better, Scott. Why don't we pick up our game?
Scott,
this is not something I excel at in just like, you know, day-to-day interactions with normal people. So how am I going to excel at this in like a broadcasting to the world sense? I don't think it's a reasonable expectation, frankly.
All right, Scott, we're going to get to the breakouts. You cannot be doing any better because your Braves signed Yasiel Puig. After the fact, yesterday, Chris and I hopped back into the studio, the home studio, that is, and we gave a little update on Yasiel Puig to the Braves, but you and Adam did not have a chance to opine. So what are your feelings with Yasiel Puig landing with the Braves?
It seems like he landed in a spot where he's going to get to play every day as the left fielder, I guess maybe right fielder with Acuña playing him left. That's still to be sorted out. And the player who obviously loses in this scenario is Adam Duvall, which, you know, Adam Duvall is kind of an underrated player, I think, but he is not somebody that fantasy baseballers were really looking at yet. He had only recently come into playing time with the addition of the DH with Nick Markakis opting out. So, you know, Adam Duvall goes back to the bench. Puig is in the lineup, batting in the middle of a very good lineup. Austin Riley, I know there's some concern there. As long as Freddie Freeman is still sidelined by COVID-19, Austin Riley is supposed to be the Braves' first baseman. When Freeman comes back, I assume Riley's back to competing with Johan Camargo for third base. And, you know, by that point, assuming Freeman misses part of the regular season, we should have a pretty good idea whether Riley is somebody who deserves to be playing every day or not. And if he's shown he is, then obviously Camargo's going back to the bench. And if he's shown he's not, then I guess we're moving on from Riley for this year, at least until somebody else goes on the IL. So, yeah, that's I think, how things stand for the Braves. Puig as a power speed threat, a pretty stable power speed threat, too. I mean, his production's been fairly consistent over the years. He's barely inside my top 40 in Roto. I have him just a little ahead of like Scott Kingery. And, you know, that's nice. It's nice to have another potential speed source at that middle to late stage of the draft. And so it's good. It's good that Puig has a job again, has a job and is with a team that wants to play him and has a place to play him.
Yasiel Puig was a top 30 outfielder in both formats last season. He was better in Roto. He was the outfielder 25 in that format and a top 70 player, three straight seasons with at least 23 home runs and 15 or more steals.
And he's been quite consistent with the batting average. Not that he's been great, but between a 263 and 267 batting average each of the past four seasons. You mentioned where you moved him up to in your ranking, Scott. I moved him up to outfielder 33 in Roto, which might be a little aggressive. It's just behind Michael Conforto and Kyle Schwarber, and I moved him up to outfielder 38 in my head-to-head ranks. Adam, what do you think about that in terms of where we have Puig kind of situated inside the top 40 outfielders? Does that make sense to you?
I think you're too high on him, Frank, because, yeah, if it were a normal offseason, that'd be one thing, but you're talking about a guy who is signing a week before the season starts. I know everybody's kind of not exactly facing live competition right now. They're just facing their teammates, so maybe that helps them, but I don't know. It just seems like tough circumstances to join a team this late in the game. I also wonder, I'll ask this from a positional standpoint, right? Ender and Ciarte will play center field for the Braves. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So Adam Duvall probably needs to play against lefties. He's not going to play against righties, but he's so good against lefties that I feel like he still should play against lefties. So What happens there? Does Ciarte sit and Acuna plays center, or does potentially Puig sit just to get Duvall's lineup bat in the lineup?
I think Ciarte would be more likely to sit. Acuna basically split his time, you know, made several starts in center for the Braves last year. It kind of depends on how Ciarte performs, right? I mean, Ciarte hasn't been much with the bat the past couple seasons, but he was the few seasons before that. So if he's basically just a big glove out there in center field, then yeah, I imagine he'll be sitting against left-handers, and Duvall would still be playing then. I don't think Puig would be coming out of the lineup. He's capable hitter against both lefties and righties.
Yeah, he's always going to be brought down by his batting average. You mentioned it, Frank. He's always going to hit around 265. It's not terrible, but it's just not that good. And then, you know, is he a 30 homer guy? He hasn't really been.
He's never been.
Yeah, so maybe he is in this environment, but 50-ish players hit 30 home runs last year. So I think if Yasiel Puig does not steal bases, and he's 29, and those things can go, I don't know. If he doesn't steal bases, I think he's going to be kind of borderline junk.
There are limits to his upside at this point.
Yeah, like for him to be one spot behind Conforto, I mean, I view Conforto completely differently than Puig. Schwarber makes more sense. He just needs to steal. If he steals, he's going to hit that. Because if he gives you 15 to 19 steals or something like that per 162 games or whatever. Probably more like 20 steals per 162 games for him. Then he's going to be great. But if he doesn't steal, then there's downside there. And he's not going to do that much with his bat, I don't think.
Yeah, I would say a 25 homer, 15 steal pace is fair for Yasiel Puig. I mean, it's pretty much where he's been at the past couple of seasons. He's never really lived up to expectations, but he's been solid. He's been serviceable. So yeah, maybe I'm a little bit too aggressive on him. I grabbed him last night in our head-to-head categories mock. 167th overall. That was just after JD Davis, Mark Canna, Kyle Tucker. So I think that was a great range to wind up with Yasiel Puig. Scott, I do have to ask you, I've seen some speculation that this Puig signing could be a reaction to Freddie Freeman missing maybe not just the start of the season. I mean, we could be talking about a few weeks now. What would you say to that? Last night, he fell to the third round in that same mock draft, pick 32. So he is starting to move down the board. Again, that's Freddie Freeman.
I mean, that's reading a lot into things, I think, because the Braves haven't just lost Freeman. They had a DH opening to fill, and then they lost Nick Markakis. And, you know, just the idea of losing Freeman when they did and not being able to count on him at the start of the season, I think kind of opened their eyes to how quickly their depth could be depleted. So I don't know that I read as much into it as they know Freeman is going to miss X amount of time. I don't think they have any idea how much time Freeman is going to miss. I don't think anybody does. It's possible he could miss the first several weeks of the season. I think it's still possible he could be ready for opening day, though that's looking less and less likely with each passing day, of course. I think where he fell in last night's draft, the middle of round three, I mean, look, we were both in that draft. We didn't take him before then. I probably would have taken him if he lasted two more picks to me in round three. I probably would have. So I think that's appropriate. But, you know, things could turn around quickly. Charlie Blackmon, his value was completely restored in last night's draft now that he's back with the Rockies and looking likely for opening day. So that's just the way this is going to be. It's going to be a mysterious timetable, and as short as the season is, you have to be cautious with it, but it can change on a dime.
Okay, so unless I saw a false report, I saw that Charlie Blackmon was placed on the IL today.
He may have been.
So I don't know, which is surprising because he came back and he was in camp and I saw a video of him swinging the bat and he seemed fine. Mm-hmm. And then today he was placed on the IL.
I mean, I know DeShields came back and Delino DeShields of the Indians came back and was placed on the IL. I am not seeing an update of Blackmon on the IL. And I think the COVID IL, they call it a 10-day IL, but you don't actually have to be on it 10 days, right? You can come off it at any point.
Like maybe it's how it works? Retroactive to him missing time. So maybe it just kind of gives them the ability to maneuver their roster around.
Let me see if I can find, because I don't see it there. Okay, I see it here.
Always just go to Twitter. Twitter knows everything, right?
Yeah, I see multiple outlets on Twitter regarding Charlie Blackmon going back on the IL. So that was going to be part of our news items, which I was going to get into right now. But, you know, look, if Charlie Blackmon is on the IL and is not expected to be ready for the start of the season, then I think that just entrenches someone like Sam Hilliard in the lineup, someone who we're pretty excited about. David Dahl as well, obviously. dare I say Matt Kemp? I read an article on The Athletic last night where they were talking to Matt Kemp now with the Rockies. So would not surprise me based on the way that the Rockies have trended the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, I couldn't care less what park he's playing at with Matt Kemp. This is really weird and needs to be sort of investigated. I guess we'll know more on tomorrow's show about Charlie Blackmon. But it is weird that they did put him on the IL. Yeah. I'm hoping it's a roster management sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll pay close attention to it and see what happens. Matt Kemp, only 1 year removed from an 818 OPS with the Dodgers, so I'll just throw the name out there for deeper leagues. Jacob deGrom was the big news last night that came out. He left with back tightness, and it was just announced that he's going for an MRI today. He has dealt with back issues in the past. Most recently, he missed opening day in 2018. What happened that season? Well, he just went on to win the Cy Young. So I don't know that we should overreact too much yet, but for the entire offseason, Scott, I was team DeGrom over Gerrit Cole and Roto. This is enough for me to just make that switch. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, it's another situation where we're going to know a lot more very soon. And I could say that more definitively when it does. But, you know, if there's any lingering health issue heading into the season, and two players are that close, I think it makes sense to flip them around, sure.
An MRI was taken last night on Anthony Rizzo's back, and it revealed that he has rib head inflammation. It's not clear whether he'll be ready to go for opening day, which is next Friday for the Cubs against the Milwaukee Brewers. So, Anthony Rizzo, you're not moving him down yet either, Scott.
I haven't yet. I'm going to make a lot of changes on Friday, probably heading into the big draft weekend and kind of get a feel for how things look then, because it's all very unclear right now.
Rizzo's one of the most boring players in fantasy. So if you just don't want to draft him, which is where I come down on it, this is more reason not to. He's definitely somewhat exciting in points leagues, but in a roto league, he's just boring. Yeah. Like I do not have any Rizzo. He is your basic, right? I don't know. Like, he's not going to win you your league. So, I don't know. You can avoid him if you want.
He's like Jose Abreu, except more boring at a higher cost. So, why would you draft Anthony Rizzo when you can have Jose Abreu? Walker Buehler is behind the other Dodgers pitchers. He is slated to throw two innings in his next appearance. He's one starting pitcher who I don't think we'll be ready to throw five or six innings, you know, around opening day heading into the first week of the season. And you hear Gerrit Cole going deep into these intra-squad starts and some other starting pitchers. Walker Buehler is not one of those, Scott.
And I think now we have a better idea why there's not any talk of Alex Wood or Ross Stripling even. in a piggyback role to start the year, because probably Walker Buehler is going to have to be. And it sounds like Julio Urias won't be fully stretched out either. But Buehler seems the furthest behind of any Dodgers pitcher. Apparently, he wasn't with the blessing of pitching coach Mark Pryor. Buehler wasn't doing much throwing during the shutdown. He was taking that time off. So he is actually having to ramp up from the start, like we thought most pitchers would have to. It turns out most pitchers don't, but Buehler is. So yeah, I mean, any thought of taking him ahead of Scherzer or Verlander, I don't think that makes sense. I don't think that makes sense. His first couple turns through the rotation at least will be short and maybe more. And, you know, if you get into three or four starts, you're talking about a quarter of the season where Buehler's not going to be pitching a usual starter's workload. So that's stock down for him.
Scott, with a few jabs there. He knows I have Walker Buehler as my third starting pitcher in Roto, just ahead of Verlander.
Well, do you still? Are you going to move him down?
No, I probably should move him down now as a result of this. I didn't know that this was happening.
Move him behind the guy who's already had two injuries this year, who's like 15 years older than him, and who's changing his mechanics.
Hey, he threw like six innings yesterday, Verlander did. Five and a third or something.
He's still been hurt twice this season before the season's even started.
Not hurt right now.
Adam, how do you rank those three? Buehler, Verlander, Scherzer.
Scherzer, Verlander, Buehler.
So you made the case.
Like, it's a little disingenuous because I guess I would rank it that way, but I would skip Verlander. I don't know. Does it make sense? I don't want Verlander. I would rather just take Buehler, but I feel like the responsible thing is to put Verlander ahead of him, but I have my own personal fears that I'm not sure everyone else should have. I don't want to project my insecurity on everyone else.
Yeah.
But personally, Verlander is another guy that I don't anticipate having on my team. It's not so scary when I say that about Anthony Rizzo. It's very scary when I say about Justin Verlander, but I'd probably going to skip him and take Buehler or Flaherty, I guess, and just avoid the concern.
No, I get what you're saying, though, Adam, because, I mean, that's partially why I have Buehler ranked ahead of them. I worry about the age. I mean, the injuries with Scherzer, too. I mean, he missed a World Series start because of a neck issue. He's dealt with some back stuff, so I worry about those two guys. Last news item, Aaron Judge was supposed to return on Tuesday. He didn't. That is so surprising. I've washed my hands. I'm not drafting Judge. I'm not drafting Stanton.
I took Judge. I can't remember 92nd overall in a draft last or 2 weeks ago. Would you have taken him there?
He's not going to play, Adam.
Of course he's going to play. He's a stiff neck. He slept the wrong way.
Oh yeah, he slept the wrong way for 3 days straight, and that's why he's not. I can't trust these guys. I can't trust. Look, everyone has a breaking point. Yes, if he falls that far, I will take him. But fifth, sixth, fourth, anywhere in that range, not taking him. Favorite breakouts, Scott, get us started. 2020, who is one of your favorite breakouts for this season?
I mean, number one, I don't have to say him, right? You can say him for me.
I don't know if it's Mark Hanna or JD Davis at this point.
Well, Mark Hanna was a sleeper. All right, we covered him yesterday. Or actually, we didn't cover him yesterday because I've covered him enough. But JD Davis. JD Davis is my favorite breakout. My favorite player to draft, period, this year. And I shouldn't have to say much to explain it. I'm frankly a little stunned. He still goes as late as he does. He hit 307 with an 895 OPS and 410 at bats last year. Obviously wasn't playing every day. Got a stretch to play every day in August. Hit 295 with 8 home runs and a 951 OPS. He was just as good, if not better. His splits, righties versus lefties, they're basically dead even. And now with the DH spot opening up, there's no doubt he's going to be playing every day for the Mets, probably swapping off with Yoenis Cespedes between left field and DH, maybe playing third base some days when Robinson Cano gets a day off. They slide McNeil over to second base. Davis is going to be a big part of the Mets lineup this year. And as good as his 307 batting average and 895 OPS were last year, his expected stats were even better. So, you know, round 13, 14, JD Davis, automatic for me,
you know,
regardless of format.
Let's have the Yoenis Cespedes conversation. I tweeted about this earlier, and we haven't talked about him enough. he's moving up the board in NFBC. You know, in 39 drafts in July, his ADP is 279. He's the 75th outfielder off the board. But Scott, I keep seeing video of Cespedes swinging. He looks spry. I see him in the field. He looks healthy. Everything I've read. The one drawback for JD Davis is, yes, the universal DH should help him, but I could still, I can just imagine the Mets still finding a way to mess this up, Scott. That is my one trepidation with JD Davis.
Well, how could they mess it up? What would they do to mess it up? What would that look like? They have Dominic Smith that maybe they could give it bats to, but like the problem for JD Davis is he doesn't really handle any spot defensively very well. He's a liability everywhere on the field. Dominic Smith is a first baseman trying to play left field. So it's not like he's an upgrade there. Cespedes might be an upgrade in left field if his legs are really feeling that good, but then they just move JD Davis to DH, you know?
Like, oh, well, I think the issue is if Cespedes can't really play the field, then he's going to DH over JD Davis.
Yeah, but they'd still need somebody to play left field. I mean, I guess they could put Jake Marisnyk out there.
Yeah, they could
put Jake. Is that the concern?
No,
Jake Marisnyk?
The concern for me is that JD Davis had pretty much no career, didn't do anything before last year.
Well, he was with the Astros, who had no spot to play him. His minor league numbers were good.
Yeah, they were good. 355 BABIP. It's obviously pretty high. Pretty high-ish. Not super high home run to fly ball rate. So probably some regression. And I just like, there was like no buzz about him. I don't know. I feel like I never see, other than Scott, you know, like I don't think the newspapers really hype him up. I don't know. For all the, you know, Mets hype, I just, JD Davis doesn't really seem to get much of it. But I trust Scott. He's been right about these types of players a lot. I wouldn't make him like my favorite player to draft, but I'll draft some JD Davis. Yeah, look, I had him last year and he did great for me. And I was so annoyed that they didn't play him every day. So that was the thing, like he was hitting that well last year and they didn't play him every day.
Right.
They could try to find reasons, you know, not to, but the DH helps. But if Cespedes can't play the field, like who would you rather have, Cespedes or JD Davis?
Oh, I would rather have JD Davis.
I agree with that. But are we getting to the point now where we should start to consider Cespedes more in drafts, Scott?
Yeah, definitely. How much more? He's a 34-year-old who hasn't played since the middle of 2018 and has had three leg surgeries since then. So, you know, it's encouraging. He's obviously worth drafting again. I took him in the reserved rounds of our recent 12-team roto auction. So that's a five outfielder league, and I got him in the reserve rounds. You know, I was thrilled to get him then. I probably wouldn't throw more than $1 or $2 at him, even in a five outfielder league, because it's still hard to say how he's going to hold up. And, you know, we haven't seen him in real competition yet. And he's quite a bit older than when we last saw him. But yes, the reports are encouraging. And I think given his track record, he's certainly somebody worth considering late in drafts again.
All right, Adam, I heard a rumor that you have so many breakouts. Why don't you spill the beans? Why don't you give us some of these breakouts here for 2020? Do you have the next Rafael Devers on your list?
I separated my breakouts into a number of categories. The already great, could be greater category, the blind faith category, the more conventional breakouts category, the not sure I believe it category, and the leap of faith category, which is different than blind faith, which I'll explain. But if you want, you guys can do all yours, and I'll just run through mine later. I don't.
Yeah, sounds like you planned a whole show here. My goodness,
this will take 5 minutes. See.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, if you want me to leave, you could just kind of step back in here and do what you've always
done.
Once
I found out Chris wasn't going to be on the show, I was like, uh-oh.
Got a lot of time.
Got
to
put my cape on.
All right, so I'll throw a few names out there. Look, these are very popular ones and pitchers that I have talked a lot about when we did our pitcher preview. Max Fried was my breakout candidate, so I'm going to remind people that, yes, I need to leave every single draft with one of Max Fried, Zach Gallen, or Frankie Montas. I didn't consider Frankie Montas because he kind of broke out already last year. No, I'm not worried about PEDs. He always threw the ball hard, and it was really the introduction of the splitter that helped Frankie Montas. So yes, I like him. He's ranked inside my top 25. But Max Fried, they continue to talk up this changeup. And this is something we talked about, Scott, where if that can help him neutralize right-handed batters, they hit 281 against him last year. That is going to be huge for Max Fried's value. The second half last year, he started using his slider more, about 6% more. The K per nine was up over 10 in that second half. His ERA was 3.63. Just would not surprise me if we're talking about Fried as a top five round pick this time next year. And then with Zach Gallen, has four different pitches that he can use, a 1.77 ERA, 0.71 whip. In the PCL last season, where I don't have the stat, but I know Chris has talked about it, I think the average ERA was like near five, and Zach Gallen had a sub two ERA.
It was 5.48, the average ERA in the PCL last year, which was always a hitter-friendly league, and then they introduced the juice ball. Average ERA was 5.48. Zach Gallen's numbers in the PCL in 14 starts last year, 1.77 ERA, 0.71 whip, 11 K per nine.
Yeah,
that's like, how do you have that up right now, Scott?
I have my breakouts 2.0 column.
Oh, okay.
Hold up. So, yeah, I mean, I have Zach Gallen as a breakout too, clearly.
A lot of people like Gallen. I get it. A lot of people like Fried. Another interesting point real quick on Gallen was I actually had the chance to talk to him at my previous job, and he said that being reunited with Carson Kelly is something that is going to help him tremendously, and they were in the Cardinals organization together back when they were both prospects there. So it was Gallen was traded away to the Marlins, Carson Kelly was traded away to the Diamondbacks, and now they're reunited. So that's another little tidbit if you need any more reasons to like Zach Gallen. Scott, Fried, Gallen, I assume you like these guys a lot as well.
Yeah, no, they're both in my breakouts column. I'm often having to compete with you for them in drafts, especially Gallen. I actually haven't drafted Fried that much. I think my pitching staff is usually pretty full by the time he goes off the board. And, you know, I definitely am impressed by him having a better xFIP than both Walker Buehler and Jack Flaherty last year. I'm impressed by him having an elite ground ball rate, good swinging strike skills. I don't want to assume too much with the changeup, and I do think he has to figure out a way to neutralize opposite handed hitters. I mean, that was his biggest drawback last year. He did actually finish with a 4.02 ERA, a 1.33 whip. I mean, not great numbers. So he needs to take a step forward, and he needs specifically to neutralize opposite handed hitters. Maybe the changeup is the key to that. You know, I'm just careful not to assume too much, but I do see Fried as in a similar place to where Shane Bieber was last year. Popular, trendy breakout pick who had problems against opposite-handed hitters in his first full year starting. And clearly Bieber figured it out. So, you know, for the right price, I'm definitely very excited about Fried. I'm just a little reluctant to rely on him too much.
Adam, who would you rather have, Gallen or Max Fried?
I'd rather have Gallen. I do look at Max Fried's whip, 1.33 last year, career 1.37 whip, and think that might still be an issue for him. But I like them both, but I'd rather have Gallen.
Both Gallen and Fried, I like getting these guys as my SP4 normally in 12-team leagues. Anything deeper than that, if you're talking a 15-team roto, I don't mind either of those guys as your SP3. Scott, give us another breakout candidate, or a few, however many you want. Just throw a bunch our way.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll give you a couple higher-end ones that have been more recent for me. Nick Castellanos, who I now think is going to perform like a second-round hitter this year.
So you got to move them inside your top 24, Scott. Come on.
It's not the first time I've said it, Adam, but I know you've been away for a while.
I was saying whoa to something else then. I'm totally aware that you've been saying that.
Castellanos. So digging deeper into the numbers, and this, I got some help from self-described StatCast geek Crosby Spencer on Twitter. He looked into kind of park effects for different parts of each park, basically. And like Comerica Park was killing Nick Castellanos. It was such an outlier in terms of home runs to center field and home runs to right center field. And Nick Castellanos drives the ball that way a lot. And then you look at his numbers after joining the Cubs last year, final 2 months, he had 321, 16 homers, a 1,002 OPS. Kind of salvaged his season because he was off to such a rough start with the Tigers before that. And you think, okay, he just got hot, you know, regression to the mean or whatever. But like the underlying numbers during that stretch with the Cubs, they really weren't that far-fetched for a guy with Castellanos' batted ball profile. And then you factor in how bad Tiger Comerica Park is for hitters like him. And now he's going to Cincinnati, which is one of the smallest ballparks in the majors, an even better environment than he was in with the Cubs. And like, it's not hard to see Castellanos putting up numbers in line with like JD Martinez or Nolan Arenado. I mean, you just project those out with the Cubs, even downgrading them a little, and that's what he looks like, and the data seems to support it. So I'm all in on Castellanos this year. I took him in the seventh round in a draft we did yesterday, a 12-teamer, and didn't think it was a reach. I mean, he's to the point now where I consider him a stud caliber bet.
I have one major issue with this, though. This comes up all the time. First of all, I completely agree about Castellanos. Even if he doesn't break out and he's just normal Nick Castellanos, this is my favorite thing about him. He's going at a spot where people aren't even like really drafting him all that much for the upside and for the breakout ability. Now he's going 88th overall. You can tell me where he is on NFBC in the last month or whatever.
76
in July anyway.
76 but, in July.
Like earlier, it was like 100th overall. Like, even a normal Nick Castellanos is not going to be that far off from that. So it's a really safe pick with a ton of upside. But what bothers me a little bit about the argument Scott just made that I've made before that other people made is that it only is 2019. He actually, the three previous years, he was better at home than he was on the road in two of those three seasons, just in terms of OPS. So going to a new ballpark is a big deal, especially when it's Cincinnati. But I think last year, the differences were so, so stark. But before that, just his home versus road splits, they were like fairly even and often better at home. So that's why I can't fully buy into that explanation. Mm-hmm. But either way, he's great value and someone I'm totally targeting.
I'm not exactly sure how to reconcile that either, because I did notice. But I mean, Castellanos himself was complaining about Comerica Park before he got traded. And the actual data, it's so extreme. 71% of the home runs, 71% of the fly balls hit to right center that would go out in the average MLB park. Only 71% go out in Comerica Park. And that is a extreme number on its own. Straightaway center, it's 29%. That is unheard of. Wow. Like it's such a stifling environment, particularly for somebody who hits the ball that way. And you do a park overlay of Nick Castellanos, Comerica Park versus Cincinnati. It's still Great American Ballpark. Keep calling it Cincinnati. You do a park overlay. It's like two dozen more home runs Castellanos would have hit in Cincinnati versus Comerica Park. And granted, he won't be playing every game in Cincinnati. He didn't play every game in Detroit last year. But like that shows how extreme the venue shift is for him specifically.
I always thought that Castellanos had that Freddie Freeman ability to break out. He hits a lot of line drives. I think that you have a 300 batting average, 35 homer pace somewhere in that bat, and perhaps Great American Ballpark is what can finally get it out of there. Adam, it's your time to shine, baby. Hit us with all those different categories, breakouts. Who you got?
So I really view this as players that I want to have some shares of because I think they have greatness potential for greatness. Okay, so first category, already great, could be greater, Gleyber Torres and Jack Flaherty. I think Torres could be like a second round pick next year and Flaherty could be like DeGrom, Coy. I think he could be, you know, first round pick next year. I definitely want a lot of them. I think they're great. I think they're worthy of being taken where they are. Blind faith category, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., self-explanatory. I do like the fact that he will at some point have first base eligibility. I wasn't on the podcast when that news came out. That helps a lot. I mean, it's a much thinner position than third base. More conventional breakouts. So these are guys that I think can go from good to great. I do want some shares of them. Chris Paddock. I understand he probably needs another pitch. I believe in the curveball. I think that it's going to eventually be a really good pitcher. And all Chris Paddock's ever done has been great. So I love Paddock. Yoan Moncada started hitting lefties a lot better last year. Rick Renteria said it just had more enough at bats. He finally got used to it. Crazy high BABIP. He was lucky last year for sure. But I think Moncada's he's a five-tool player that's 25 years old. So there's a chance for him to be a superstar. Jose Berríos, there are enough amazing starts in there. Seven scoreless innings with 12 strikeouts, those kinds of starts. He does that as well as almost any pitcher in baseball, that he needs to get another pitch in his arsenal. But if Berríos does, he can go from being a 370-ish ERA guy to a 310 ERA. Like, he could really break out. And you know he's going to give you the innings. So he's consistent. He's not a risky pick. He's safe to begin with. And I still see potential for greatness there for Berríos. This guy's not so much a breakout because he did it in 2016. But Corey Seager, I think, is capable of being a top five shortstop like he was in 2016. So that is my more conventional breakouts list. Two more players. The not sure I believe it list is one guy. It's Kyle Schwarber. The reason I think Kyle Schwarber might have his, you know, his best season is he's probably not going to face a lot of lefties because there aren't that many starters in the NL Central there aren't all that many in the AL Central. And the ones, the starting pitchers in the AL and NL Central that are lefties, they're not very good for the most part. So they might not keep their rotation spots. So Kyle Schwarber might just be in the lineup more than ever. And that in itself will lead to a breakout. And this one, I don't think anyone's going to agree with. The leap of faith, the guy that I really wouldn't mind taking a shot on in a deeper league, can't so much justify it in any 12-team league. Ahmed Rosario, he has gotten incrementally better. I think he can push his way up toward the top of the order. You know he's going to give you some steals. There's pedigree there. Could be a post-type sleeper or a post-type breakout. So that is my full list. Yeah, there you go. Ahmed Rosario was the last one. Kyle Schwarber. And then the four conventional ones are Paddock, Moncada, Berríos, and Corey Seager.
Yeah, you almost made a boo-boo there, Adam. This is a breakout show, not a sleeper show. Scott, yeah. Any names? Any names you want to rattle off real quick?
Oh, I'm not good at rattling, but I will do it. Kenta Maeda was the other one I was going to talk about before I got long-winded on Castellanos. Just the fact that doesn't seem like the Twins are in a position to limit his innings the way the Dodgers always did because of some terms in his contract. They don't have the pitching depth they do. And Maeda seems well equipped to pitch deep into games. He's efficient. He's always been good the third time through the order when he's gotten a chance. I think he becomes a workhorse for the Twins this year. And the numbers, the supporting numbers are very encouraging there. You know what? I'm not loving the look of my breakout list overall based on recent developments. Garrett Hampson, I'm going to call him a breakout. Thanks in part to the DH spot, of course. And he's so versatile that they're going to find places for him in the lineup virtually every day. I think one easy route would be Daniel Murphy going to DH, Ryan McMahon going to first base, Hampson at second base. But Hampson can also play the outfield. Final 16 games last year, he hit .343 with 5 homers and 7 steals. That was like the majority of his production for the entire season, but he made a change to his stance, changed his timing mechanism, and finally lived up to the sleeper hype we were all piling on him then. Big steals potential, available very late. You know, I think he has the kind of upside to be an early round pick in fantasy if everything goes right, especially in that environment. Willie Calhoun, I know he's somebody you like, Frank. I mean, I think he's basically Mike Moustakas of the outfield. I hope he gets his health situation sorted out because last I heard he was having an MRI on his hip. And I think that's all I want to highlight here. I'm looking at my column and I have guys like Jesus Luzardo, COVID, Miguel Sano, COVID, Kyle Tucker. We just heard Dusty Baker doesn't really give him a chance of winning the starting right field job. Nick Anderson, I think, has breakout potential, but who knows how the Rays are going to handle their bullpen. Jose Urquidy, COVID. Well, we don't know that he is COVID, but he's on the IL. So, yeah, a lot of my breakout picks are being drafted with less confidence now.
I give you steal some of mine if you're really not feeling great about your list. Feel free.
I gave you guys a few pitchers, a few outfielders that I want to highlight. Eloy Jimenez, somebody I talk a lot about, basically the same ADP as Vlad. He's going, you know, at the end of the fifth round, early sixth round. The pedigree is there. Wouldn't surprise me if you get a 35 to 40 home run pace out of him, a great batting average as well. Was known for his hit tool in the minors. And then a little bit later on, Ian Happ and Alex Verdugo in deeper leagues. Hap, I think, has the power speed combination. Yeah. He cut the strikeouts last year, a career low. It was 25% in the majors. He had an 898 OPS in 58 games with the Cubs last season. He's still just 25 years old, so I have a lot of faith in Ian Happ, more so in Roto as like your fourth or fifth outfielder. And then Alex Verdugo. He can hit against lefties. He can hit against righties. Tons of line drives. Reminds me of a poor man's Michael Brantley, potentially even becoming Michael Brantley one day. He's still very young, and now he's with the Boston Red Sox with an opportunity to play every single day. So Eloy on the high end, and then Happ and Verdugo, lower end.
Those are good picks, and Happ especially is somebody I've found myself drafting a lot more recently. So another guy I'm going to throw in like that is Colton Wong, who I haven't talked about much. And, you know, he goes so late that I tend to think of him more as a sleeper, but of course he's been around a while. And I think he's another player who kind of subtly benefits from the introduction of the DH spot, because now the Cardinals can stick Matt Carpenter there every day, hopefully keep him healthy. That leaves third base for Tommy Edman. And suddenly there's nobody who's there to platoon with Colton Wong anymore. And, you know, maybe he doesn't need to be platooned. He hit .342 in the second half last year. His batted ball profile changed in a pretty dramatic way. He kind of, I don't know if he officially lowered his launch angle, but he was hitting fewer fly balls. He looked like a guy who finally realized, oh, I'm not really cut out to hit be a home run hitter in the majors. He stole 24 bases in 28 chances. And like I said, hit .342 in the second half, hit .285 overall. But, you know, really kick things into gear in the second half. And if he's batting at the top of the Cardinals lineup, if he's a reliable base stealer like he looked like he was last year, I mean, it's a profile that's not too dissimilar from like Whit Merrifield, you know? Drafting Colton Wong, crap, I don't have his ADP pulled up. Drafting him 214th overall versus drafting Whit Merrifield 47th overall. You're basically getting the same player. I mean, you're getting fewer assurances, yes, but you know, the final outcome might be similar.
Yeah, against lefties last year, you mentioned that he was better last season. Hit .288 against lefties, .283 against right-handed pitching. And then in that second half, he did lower the launch angle, started hitting more line drives. First half, 41% fly ball rate. Second half, 28% fly ball rate.
Big drop.
So he started hitting more line drives and more ground balls, and that's something that benefited Colton Wong in a big way. All right, quickly promote a few things. You enjoy the show here, drop a 5-star Apple Podcast review. We really would appreciate it. And leave us a question, too. We'll be sure to answer that here on the air. And just want to remind everyone that your submissions, last time I'm going to remind you, submissions are due this Friday in order to try and take part in our listener leagues. We have two listener leagues set up. Next Monday, July 20th at 10 p.m., we will have a 12-team head-to-head points league. And then next Wednesday will be the For the People League, July 22nd at 8 p.m. That draft will be. So send us an email, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, with a song that you've made, either about the show, about baseball. Get creative with it. Have some fun. If you don't have the means to make a song, just give us a reason why you think that you should be in one of those leagues. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're answering your questions here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
We're back here on Fantasy Baseball Today, about to answer your questions, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We did a head-to-head categories draft last night. I just want to quickly mention a few things that I noticed. Jose Ramirez went 10th overall in this draft. I don't think it's crazy because I think you want difference makers who are going to give you steals for this season, but it's a little weird that he went over Francisco Lindor. Lindor went 14th overall to you, actually, Scott, and it was maybe because people are worried about his steals dropping if he falls to third in the lineup, if he hits in the middle. But I looked into this, and at leadoff in his career, 162 game pace, 24 steals batting leadoff. While batting third, it's 21 steals over a 162 game pace. So I think if people are worried about that, it might be a little bit overblown.
It might be, but historically, I'm not sure how often when Lindor was batting third, Carlos Santana was batting second, which is also part of the plan. Carlos Santana is very slow and he stops at first base a lot. You know, he goes station to station a lot because he reaches base so often on walks, you know, always among the league leaders there. So I feel like it would have to cut into Lindor steals chances, just how often Santana is going to be clogging things up ahead of him, but hopefully not too much.
Adam, I know you're a big Jose Ramirez guy. Would you take him over Lindor?
It's one of those things where you probably could have gotten both of them if you just knew Jose Ramirez was going to go typically in round two, so you never even had to make that decision. But if you're saying I can only have one, no, I would take Lindor.
I agree with you. Yeah. A few other things I noticed I'll mention quickly here. Relievers went higher than they normally do. Josh Hader, 45th overall. His ADP is 54. Kirby Yates went 58th. His ADP is 66. Roberto Osuna went 72nd. His ADP is 80. So I think if people want to lock down those elite relievers and saves, then we're starting to see those on the rise a little bit. And then the COVID concerns, Freddie Freeman lasted to the third round. Mike Trout went 5th overall. LeMahieu slipped a little bit to the 7th. Moncada slipped a little bit to the 7th. Sano pretty much the same round 10. And then Lizardo fell to round 12. And he went about 20 spots later than his ADP. So keep that in mind when you have your drafts this upcoming weekend. So, all right. What's up?
When are you taking Trout?
In a roto league, I would take him 8th. I've dropped him down. I've dropped him below. Well, now we got to see what happens with DeGrom. But originally, I had him now below DeGrom and Cole and also Trey Turner. So that's where I have him in roto. In a head-to-head points league, I'm still all right with him 5th or 6th in that area. Too aggressive?
That's the biggest drop I had heard anybody talk about so far. I have him about 5th where he went here. You know, I'm obviously dropping him behind Yelich, Bellinger, Betts, Cole probably in a head-to-head points league, and Acuna obviously in a roto league. So yeah, 5th sounds right for me in both formats. I would still take Trout ahead of Trey Turner. You know, I might take him behind Bregman, Alex Bregman in a points league. So that might be one other player that drops him in that format.
If he's going 5th, can I call Mike Trout a sleeper?
that's the Chris Towers line of thinking. Yeah. Giancarlo Stanton is a sleeper. All right, your email is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This one comes from Rosendo. What's so special about Julio Urias? He's on my waivers, and I'm in desperate need for a pitcher. Aren't the Dodgers going to hold him back even with David Price out? Should I use my number one pick on waivers for Julio Urias? What do you think, Scott?
I mean, if you're desperate for a pitcher, that seems like a layup. I think your concerns are well-founded. He's not going to be as stretched out as Kershaw, Wood, and Stripling are going to be, and the Dodgers have a lot of starting caliber arms that they're trying to work into the mix here. But Julio Urías, at the start of the offseason, nearly a full calendar year ago, he was somebody they were already saying they were ready to move him into the rotation. He was announced before Alex Wood was. He was announced before Ross Stripling was. So particularly in a 60-game season where they don't have to preserve his innings over the long haul, I think the plan would be to build him up for a full starter's workload. And, you know, I have him in my breakouts column too. We didn't talk about him. I guess we are now. And it's been a long time coming for this guy. He debuted as a 19-year-old. I think he was the first starting pitcher to do that since Felix Hernandez. It's so rare. And he was considered arguably the best pitching prospect in baseball at the time. Obviously got set back by injuries, but looked really good in kind of a swingman role last year. I think he's ready to take the next step.
It's worth noting that Urías has been much better as a reliever in his career, 35 appearances, a 2.21 ERA with a 1.13 whip. As a starter, a 3.66 ERA with a 1.35 whip. Adam, you know, in a points league, I don't know how many innings we're going to get out of Urías. I mean, even as a SPARP, is he better as a roto pitcher than in head-to-head points?
He might be, but I just don't understand. We have this conversation every day about guys getting stretched out and this and that. There aren't enough pitchers to go around that are going to be like stretched out, ready to go, pitching deep into games. You're going to have some guys on your roster, I would imagine, unless you seriously heavily invest in pitchers early. And so the season's not 2 weeks long. It's not 3 weeks long. You know, Urías is a special talent. He is nasty. He's got a 3.18 career ERA. And as Scott mentioned, he's super young. I could buy that. He's better in roto, especially if he can get the walks down a little bit and get that whip down. But I still think, you know, he's worth picking up off waivers if he's available. And,
definitely.
Yeah. Pick him up. I just don't know you aren't going to run in for a lot of fantasy managers aren't going to run into that problem of having someone in the rotation who's not stretched out and is not going quality start, not going six innings for his first two starts.
It does seem like more the exception than the rule, players whose workload will be limited early on. And I think we thought it would be the other way around, but yeah, I mean, not everybody's going to be ready to go the distance right away.
This next one's from Matt. Hey, Alexander, Aaron, and Thomas.
Sounds like Hamilton characters. Oh, I mean, founding fathers, but
is Aaron Burr a founding father?
Yeah.
I really don't know much about him other than, you know, what he did.
I mean, he was around. I don't know much about him either. He was a vice president and killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel.
But... Oh, thanks, Scott.
Wow, spoiler alert.
I got to see Hamilton.
Wow, oh my gosh. On Part of My Take, Trevor Bauer said he spent the extra 3 months getting stronger and working on his command. He also mentioned he added 1 to 2 miles per hour to his fastball. Due to this, would it have any effect on your ranking? I mean, I'll just start off, like, I am the Trevor Bauer hater on the show, but I will say, if he's throwing 1 to 2 miles per hour harder, that is something that is going to, that should help him. But you really won't know until the season starts. So that's my take on
that. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal, I think. Especially if it's 2 miles per hour. It would help him a lot. He could go either way, but he could be a guy that's like, all right, short season, 60 games. I'm just going to throw as hard as I can. It probably does already, actually.
Especially when he's launching the ball into the batter's eye in Kansas City.
I would be interested in hearing this from a different source. Trevor Bauer says a lot of things.
Right? Yeah, like, true. I believe Trevor Bauer less than... talking about Trevor Bauer, I believe Bauer less than, like, other people talking about Bauer.
It's like, what if I came on the show and said, hey, guys, last week I threw 100 miles per hour. Would you believe me? Probably not.
Yeah.
He's the ultimate wild card. Look, it wouldn't surprise me if he performs like a second round pick. We've seen him do it before. It wouldn't surprise me if he's on the waiver wire come the mid-August. It just, Trevor Bauer could go either way for me.
There is no way he will be on the waiver wire in 3 weeks. That would be a surprise.
You'll see. You'll see, Adam.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either.
This one comes from Chris. I'm the commissioner in a 16-team keeper league that's been going for almost 20 years. Two teams do not want to play this season regardless of rule changes. What do we do? Just lock their keepers and play down two teams, but have their players off limits? If we take that route, it poses another issue of next year's draft. We do a straight draft based on last year's record. If they don't play, where do we put them? Look, if they don't play, you put them, they get last pick if they want to come back next year. That's easy for
me. Yeah, this is strange. I haven't even considered this possibility. Teams like fantasy participants wanting to just opt out for this season. Like,
it's 2020, you know, Scott. Anything can happen.
It's common people dropping out of leagues permanently, but they're not willing to forfeit their spot in the league. They just don't want to play this year. That's
I would do exactly what is mentioned here. I would lock their keepers, play down two teams, and yes, I would not put their players back into the player pool. I would basically lock their rosters from everybody else. And just play a 14-team league without a bunch of players, which is weird. But this is a 20-year league, so you don't want to have a situation where they're not back next year. They have to be back next year. So, yeah, it's a very unconventional, but it's what I'd do.
Do you automatically give them those two teams 15th and 16th pick next year, Adam?
You know, I think you could, but another thing you can do is let everybody pick their draft order and have them get the last pick, like the last preference. Because some people like picking 15th and 16th, you know?
Yeah.
But they should have like the worst draft spot if that exists.
This next one's from Tom. You guys talked a lot about NL pitchers being downgraded because of the DH. Is there a chance it could help some pitchers because they won't be pulled for a pinch hitter in close games? Something I hadn't really thought about, Scott, but I guess it's feasible.
That will happen sometimes. I can't sit here and tell you today which pitchers will be more affected by that than others.
It's hard to quantify.
Yeah. And I think the obvious losses in percentages that come from facing an extra hitter every time through the lineup certainly outweigh that.
Yeah.
This next one's from Steve. Hi, Walter, Ty, Christy, Honus, and Babe. I don't know that we've ever had five people on.
Yeah, the best of the best, basically.
But I guess we can include Heath Cummings in one of these. 12-team keeper roto auction draft, $260 budget. Keeper salary increases basically 20% every year. My keepers with next year's 2020 salary are Fernando Tatis for $6, Pete Alonso for $8, Cody Bellinger for $8, Kyle Tucker for $6, Kirby Yates for $6, Aaron Nola for $12, Chris Paddock for $8, and Justin Verlander for $33. My question is, should I keep Mackenzie Gore for $3 over Mitch Garver for $3? Garver gives me an advantage at catcher, but I won't keep Verlander after this season, and it would be nice to have a cheap young pitcher, a potential ace, in Gore. I just don't know how much Gore will help this year, and I want to play to win. But should I neglect next season? But I don't want to neglect next season since this one is so short. What should I do? What do you think, Scott? Would you rather have Gore for $3 or Garver for $3?
I know what Scott's going to say.
Oh, you do? Do you? You do? All right, answer for me, because
Scott's going to say Garver, and then I'm going to say Gore.
Scott's struggling a little bit. I don't know if it's a slam dunk for him.
I assume that you're limited to 8 keepers, because this question raises a lot of other questions for me. Like, why wouldn't you keep Verlander for $33 next year?
If it increases 20%,
then he was showing next year's salaries, I thought. But even if he wasn't, I mean, Verlander's going for, you know, in a league where people have a bunch of cheap keepers like this, Verlander's going to go over $50, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Next year.
And next year, he would probably be a $39 or $40 keeper based on the 20% increase. So you probably still would keep him.
Right. But, you know, I guess he's limited to 8 keepers, and so he's thinking. I actually think I might go Gore here. Because Garver's already, I think he's already 30. Like, he's not, or 29 or something like that. He's not a young guy, and obviously not a very proven guy. And who knows if he's going to be a long-term option for me. Like, you could just buy him back if you want a catcher that bad.
Mitch Garver is 29 years old.
At a really low price, the way you want Gore locked in at a low price.
So you're taking Gore, Adam. You're taking Gore as well.
Yeah, and apparently I don't know Scott as well as I thought I did.
I know. I mean, you're off the show for a couple of weeks, and this guy just completely changes on you, Adam. This next one's from Ryan. My league is having unlimited IL spots this year. We have a verbal clause that you cannot add a player and put him in an IL spot. Thoughts?
You guys watch South Park?
Duh.
Dum, 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 dum. That's how I feel about this.
Well, I mean, I think that rule makes sense, though, because, I mean, if someone just gets hurt, you could just pick them up and throw them on the IL.
Oh, right yeah, away. You know what? Unlimited IL spots.
Oh, who's the dumb, 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 dumb
yeah,
now,
no,
Adam?
It's me. It's me. Okay, I'm dumb, 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 dumb. I wouldn't do it that way. I would have a limit or maybe, like, unlimited COVID, but two or three non-COVID or something. But okay, fair enough. I agree. If you have unlimited IL spots, you shouldn't. No, because here's the problem. You've got to have some capacity to pick up IL players. Like I think you have to separate it COVID versus non-COVID if you're going
to
do this.
What if you're still allowed to pick up IL players, but you can't place them on the IL? Like they just have to be on your regular bench.
I guess.
And we're not going to know everybody who's placed on the IL for COVID too. So that's
here's the big. Well, you'll know. You'll know without knowing, I think. But here's the big issue. Maybe not, Scott. The big issue is this: what happens when that player comes off the IL? Like then it's just a free for all, or you know, to get the guy. Like he's sitting on waivers. You can't stash him. Nobody can pick him up.
Right.
Well, it's presumably. Nobody wanted him. Like who you're imagining somebody so high end just sitting out there that it's going to be a race to pick him up. I'm not sure why that would be the case.
No, like if he was, not necessarily, but like I don't know. Maybe it's I don't know. I have no idea. I'm an idiot. I'm just gonna stop talking.
And Tout Wars, we have unlimited IL spots. I had never even conceived it before, but that's just the standard. In Tout Wars, and I've played in it 3 years now, and it hasn't really changed things for me, except when my players get hurt, I don't have to worry about dropping them, you know? So I really don't think it's a big deal.
Look, I think in most leagues this year, we spoke about this, how many IL spots you should have. I think 3 to 5 is probably that magic number, but if you do play with unlimited IL spots, you should not be able to just pick up an IL player who's on the IL and they go right into one of those unlimited spots. If you want to pick up a player who's on the IL, they should count as one of your actual bench spots. They shouldn't be allowed to be added right to one of those IL spots. All right, that'll do it. That's it. Breakouts in the books. We got sleepers and breakouts already done. Tomorrow we will be talking about busts here on the show for Scott and Adam. I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching on the Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.